Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls Media Roundtable. This morning, House Democrats passed their major healthcare, education, and climate package. Not one Republican voted for the package. It now goes to the Senate. We will discuss details later in the show. We begin by discussing a Capital & Main USA Today investigation about the dangers of ICE flights. Today's guest, journalist Angelica Abaladejo, reports that the U.S. government has hired a few private air charter companies to fly hundreds of thousands of immigrants between detention centers across the country and to airports abroad for deportations since 2004. Angelica reports that the charter flights became more frequent and more expensive after the Trump administration intensified immigration enforcement and the COVID pandemic disrupted commercial air travel. ICE spent $204 million on private flights during Trump's final year in office, more than double what the agency spent the year he became president. And the Biden administration, despite campaign promises to pause deportations while it reassesses immigration enforcement practices, still plans to spend $114 million on charters this year. Angelica Abaladejo is an award-winning investigative journalist and Capital & Main staff reporter in Denver. Her reporting on immigration, criminal justice, and gender issues has been published by a number of publications, including The Guardian and CNN. Hi, Angelica. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me on and for covering these issues.
Well, it's great to have you, and thank you for covering this issue, which doesn't get a lot of attention. And I understand that you and your colleagues got your hands on thousands of pages of government documents. So first off, how did you even begin to investigate this story, this issue?
You know, you're absolutely right. This isn't an issue that has seen a whole lot of media coverage or even a whole lot of scrutiny from advocates who typically tend to look very closely at private industry when it comes to the federal government. So whereas the detention facilities run by private companies have seen quite a deal of investigative journalism, I noticed a few years ago in 2019 that these ICE flights, although they seemed to be ramping up, hadn't gotten a whole lot of attention. So I paired up with the Fund for Investigative Journalism at the time in a fellowship that allowed me more time and space to make the kind of Freedom of Information Act or public records requests to get this kind of information from ICE itself. Unfortunately, the government has not been very transparent about the operation of these flights. And so any kind of internal documents that can be obtained really open up a window into understanding what's been taking place with these flights, which started in about 2004 and have only been increasing in their frequency and like you mentioned, their expense over time. So the thousands of pages of documents that I looked at for this most recent investigation were mainly internal reports that the government was using to track problems with its flights. So every time there was a safety concern, an accident, some kind of incident of any kind, these were being documented internally. And although ICE had not told anyone in public about it, this story has now been able to reveal quite a bit of that.
So as you report, this started in 2004. You write that the U.S. government has hired a few private air charter companies to fly hundreds of thousands of immigrants between detention centers across the country. So tell us just more about that and some basic information, since this doesn't get much attention.
Sure. So the way that this tends to work is that ICE hires just a handful of private air charter brokers who arrange the flights for them. And so these companies in the last few years have been Classic Air Charter and Aircraft Transport Services. And they then, in turn, hire a whole slew of other private companies to carry out the flights. So everything from the actual airplane operator, the pilot and crew, to private guards and private flight nurses, and all of the services that are needed at the airports where they're landing. And these tend to be in secluded tarmacs, typically in airports where, you know, most of us aren't flying into. ICE has a couple of hubs that they use for these flights as their main transport centers. And many of these have detention centers actually directly on the tarmac. And they are located in Mesa, Arizona, is the ICE Air Operations Hub. And apart from that, there's also a lot of flights going in through Miami, Florida, through Alexandria, Louisiana, and through Texas. And so these private air charter companies are, you know, conducting these services for the government at a pretty large profit. And because they're operating out of these secluded areas, there isn't a whole lot of scrutiny or attention on what kind of conditions are on these flights. And that's what I've really been trying to dig into.
You also report that these airlines are not household names. You write about World Atlantic Airlines and Swift Air. They've operated most ICE flights since 2010. And you report that since 2004, these airlines have charged the U.S. government more than $2 billion.
That's right. So most transport of immigrant detainees actually takes place on these charter flights rather than the government, for example, purchasing tickets on a commercial airline like we would. And so these private flights are incredibly expensive. They take a lot of coordination in terms of planning, particularly when you're attempting to deport people to other countries. And so particularly when it comes to longer distance flights going to places in the African continent, in Asia, ICE has been ramping up those kinds of flights, particularly under the Trump administration. They've continued during the Biden administration, and those flights tend to be the most expensive, hence the high cost.
You write that, I mean, looking back, just say a couple of administrations, under Barack Obama, who deported more people than all 20th century presidents combined, the budget for private immigration flights peaked at $95 million, dropped to $88 million in 2017, the year Trump became president, and then his administration ramped up spending to an all-time record of $205 million, a nearly 133% increase. Is there any transparency here looking at, you know, how much these companies charge the government, where this, how this money is actually spent?
So ICE internally does track how much it's spending on these flights, and I've been able, through my Public Records Act request, to obtain some of that data, and it's how I was able in my reporting to identify, you know, how many thousands of dollars are being spent on each individual flight, sometimes, you know, up into the tens of thousands for just one flight that might be transporting maybe five people. And so the costs are very high, and we've been able to learn that looking at some of this internal data. But the administration currently and previous administrations and ICE itself have not been very transparent at all about how they're spending taxpayer money on these flights.
Let's talk about what actually happens on these flights. And can you just remind us the human aspect of all of this? So let's say you have someone who, you know, left Guatemala, for example, and tried to make it to the United States. And we've done so many shows about how harrowing that journey is. And then they might be detained. They might be separated from their family members and then deported. Can you first just talk about what you learned about how people are actually treated on these flights?
Sure. Yes. So I have talked to dozens of people who have been in ICE custody, who've been detained and who've been deported on these flights. And really, the deportation flight is the culmination of a whole series of experiences that they have in custody that many describe as torture, that many say create such a high level of stress. You know, there's different situations for every person who's come to the United States, oftentimes seeking asylum, and end up wrapped up in the system of detention and deportations. But something that seems to be a clear through line, everyone I've spoken to, is that they feel there's a lack of humanity in the way that they're treated. Oftentimes, I've heard them describe the transport process as them being herded like cattle. And, the process of being handcuffed and then shackled with chains that are wrapped around your waist and your ankles, and then being, led up in a line of other people who are also in the same condition onto a plane that's headed back to a country where sometimes, people haven't been for years, or they have a severe fear of retaliation that could happen against them being returned to that country. There's a wide variety of emotions that people have described to me, but oftentimes it's one of just extreme distress and fear. And the process of being put onto one of these charter flights is a very terrifying experience for many of these people.
Today, we are speaking with Angelica Albala-Dejo, who is an award-winning investigative journalist and Capital & Main staff reporter in Denver. Angelica has a piece out with USA Today, and you can find it at yourcallradio.org. It's called A Drunk Mechanic, Shackled Immigrants, A Crash Landing, The Dangers of ICE Flights. If you have any questions for Angelica about what she found, again, this is not an issue that gets much attention, but it is so important, you can give us a call. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Angelica, you've got some examples in your piece. Let's just talk about a few of them. You write about a private jet hired by ICE to transport immigrant detainees that landed in Louisiana, and heavy smoke filled the cabin. It became increasingly hard for the 168 passengers, guards, officers, crew, and undocumented immigrants to breathe. Some yelled for help as they choked on toxic fumes for 8 minutes, but the pilot stuck to normal procedures, taxiing down the airport runway and parking as usual in front of the Alexandria Detention Center. I mean, this sounds horrific. Those of us who've been on planes, you can't even imagine something like this happening. As you write, many people were dizzy, some were vomiting, they required medical attention. Can you just tell us more about this incident?
Yes, absolutely. So this was one of the more dramatic incidents that I found looking through the internal ICE reports. And the toxic fumes ended up being the result of hydraulic fluid that had entered the cabin's air conditioning system and was just being sprayed on all of the passengers as a fine mist. And, I found that the flight, despite all of these problems, still ended up costing the government more than $26,000. It's unclear if that included the medical bills for all of the people, including guards, detainees, ICE officers who needed medical attention afterwards. And, in digging into this incident, I was able to find that it actually took months for the companies to give any kind of response to ICE about how they were going to prevent something like this from happening in the future. And even when they did respond, they wouldn't give any kind of information about what actions they were taking. It turned out that an aviation investigatory body, the National Transportation Safety Board, looked into this incident, and they found that it was all due to mechanical problems. And this was something that was a through line in my reporting with many of the accidents and safety problems that these flights have had, is that these private air charter companies operating them just weren't very careful with their maintenance checks and ended up, hiring subcontractors that just didn't do a very good job and didn't have very good training.
Well, and when you look at what happened on this particular flight, you write that barely a year later, that same quarter century old jet caught fire during a crash landing and sent shackled passengers struggling to escape as flight attendants discovered that one of the emergency slides didn't work. I mean, it's hard to imagine being in a plane filled with smoke and then to think that you're shackled and cannot move. I mean, were you able to get anyone to comment on how this is allowed to happen? And in this case, a second time?
Shockingly, in trying to speak to federal aviation safety bodies like the FAA, I was not able to determine that there's any kind of guidance or laws when it comes to transporting large numbers of shackled detainees in this way. And in trying to ask ICE whether they've created their own precautionary measures, their own, you know, methods for even providing, you know, when you go on a commercial flight, you tend to hear the flight crew give some kind of standard safety briefing. Well, from what I've heard from detainees and a guard who have been on board these ICE flights, it's the same kind of standard safety briefing at the beginning of each flight. There isn't any kind of advice specific to what you should do. You know, for example, to put on a life jacket or an oxygen mask or use a flotation device or even to get out of the plane, like you mentioned, particularly if there's, you know, an obstruction like one of the slides not working. There's no special guidance for these folks. And the safety presentations are also in English only. And many detainees don't speak the language. So it seems pretty clear that there's a potential here for these detainees who are shackled to not know how to get out of the planes. And there have been multiple times when ICE has had to evacuate its flights and hasn't really been able to do so in a timely way. Mm.
Today, we are talking about an important investigation about ICE flights, an issue that doesn't get much attention. And we're joined by Angelica Albaladejo, who is an award-winning investigative journalist and Capital & Main staff reporter. Angelica, my phone is blowing up right now. I just wanted to mention some breaking news that Kyle Rittenhouse was found not guilty of all charges in the Wisconsin murder trial. Again, Kyle Rittenhouse was found not guilty of all charges in the Wisconsin murder trial. And we are going to try to see if we can get a journalist who can comment on this, because this is just really major, major news. Angelica, you know, talking about the safety of these planes, you have a quote from John Goglia, a former aircraft mechanic who served on the National Transportation Safety Board. He said, quote, basically, when you're flying the contracts for the government, the FAA just throws up their hands and walks away.
You know, I was shocked to learn this as well. And in trying to ask the FAA for more information about this, they deferred all of those questions back to ICE. There are a number of government agencies that are supposed to have oversight of these kinds of operations, but I have found through my reporting that flights like this really don't have very much direct oversight. A lot of it is just about self-reporting from the companies themselves. And so even in one of the accidents that I described in my story, I found that, the FAA had one of their own regulators on the plane. And that regulator thought that the pilot had behaved just fine. This was on the flight with the toxic fumes, the hydraulic fluid and the air conditioning. And so it appears that, you know, even when the FAA does have oversight, there really isn't much that's being done or changed. Mm.
Have you been able to contact any of the people who have been on these flights, especially the flights that, you know, had smoke in the air, for example? I mean, I always just wonder, for people who've gone through such a traumatic experience, you know, what is life like for them many months later or a year later? Have you been able to do that, or are you planning to contact some of these people?
You know, that's a wonderful question, and it's something that I have been pursuing. I hope that, you know, having the story out there and speaking with folks like you on the radio can help bring some attention to this and hopefully draw some of these people who have had these experiences out into the open to talk about what's happened to them. One of the issues with doing this kind of reporting is that many of the documents that I'm able to obtain from the government are heavily redacted, which means that lots of things are blocked out, and that includes people's names. And so trying to identify who was on any one of these flights is extremely challenging. And so I have, you know, attempted over the last few years to contact a number of people who work as ICE officers, who work as guards, who've worked as flight nurses on these planes and crew. I have successfully spoken to dozens of people who have been deported on these flights, but not on the particular ones that had accidents that I described in the story. So I'd really like to put a plea out to, you know, anyone who has information about this to please come and speak with me. I understand why you might be afraid to come forward, but getting this information out there can hopefully draw some attention to what the conditions are and potentially lead to some change.
You report that before ICE boards detainees onto private jets, officers handcuff every immigrant and wrap chains around their waist and ankles. I mean, again, this is happening on U.S. soil. All detainees are restrained like this, whether they're the sole passenger or one of 150, and whether they're heading a few hours away to a detention facility or on a lengthy multi-stop deportation flight. Dozens of former ICE detainees told Capital and Maine that while shackled, they had trouble climbing the stairs to board the planes, fastening their seatbelts, using the bathroom, or eating and drinking. Danilo Cortez, a man deported to Nicaragua in 2019, told Capital and Maine, quote, "It's one of the worst experiences of my life, being on the airplane all shackled up like that. When there's turbulence, you're thinking the worst." I mean, Angelica, has anything changed under Biden? I mean, it sounds like, well, first off, is anything changing when you look at the humanity involved in all of this?
You know, as far as I have been able to determine, nothing has changed since Biden came into office. These flights have continued. The conversations I've had with people who have been on these flights indicate that the conditions remain the same. The same companies are being hired to operate the flights despite this history of dangerous practices and accidents. And so, unfortunately, it doesn't look like anything has slowed down. Even when it comes to countries that have, you know, conditions on the ground that the United States identifies as being concerning, folks are still being deported back there. For example, flights to Haiti have continued, and there have been dozens and dozens and dozens of flights after that country's president was assassinated. And the country endured yet another earthquake that killed thousands. And so there's such conditions of instability there, and yet the Biden administration is continuing those flights. It seems like a clear indicator that these flights are going on no matter what.
And Brian Concannon, a human rights lawyer who founded the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti, said knowingly forcing deportees to Haiti onto unsafe planes is another link in the chain of dangerous inhumanity. You can find the Capital and Maine USA Today investigation at yourcallradio.org. Angelica Albaladejo is an award-winning investigative journalist and Capital and Maine staff reporter in Denver. Angelica, thank you and your team so much for bringing this to light, and thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you. And again, just to let you know, we got some breaking news. I'm just reading from The Guardian right now. A jury found Kyle Rittenhouse not guilty on charges related to his shooting dead two people at an anti-racism protest and injuring a third in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Rittenhouse killed Joseph Rosenbaum, 36, and Anthony Huber, 26, and wounded Gage Grosskreutz, 27, when he shot them with an assault rifle as he roamed the streets of Kenosha with other self-described militia during protests in August 2020. The trial was seen as a test case for the U.S. as it seemed to illustrate the very different attitudes of law enforcement when confronted with armed white militia groups or anti-racism protests such as Black Lives Matter. Again, a jury just found Kyle Rittenhouse not guilty on all charges related to his shooting dead two people at a protest in 2020. This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. We'll be back after this.